This is Greater LA, KCRW show that connects you to the people and places and legalized pot of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Today, yeah, California has five on it. 5 years since the passage of Proposition 64, the Adult Use of Marijuana Act, that legalized recreational cannabis here in the Golden State. There were high hopes, pun intended, when California first adopted Prop 64 back in 2016. The idea was to bring in money from taxes, to reel back the impacts of the year-long war on drugs, to expunge marijuana misdemeanors, and to turn the state's illicit cultivators and sellers legal. So what has actually happened in the year since, those 5 years? Well, not all of the state's dreams have come true, including right here in Los Angeles. For the anniversary, we're going to devote this entire show to looking back on how far we've come, what LA is doing right and what it's doing wrong, and why the illegal market continues to boom. Here with us today, Mary Carrion's a freelance journalist specializing in California cannabis. She was the former editor-in-chief of Mary Jane, which is Snoop Dogg's cannabis publication. Hey, Mary.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you for joining us today. Joining us alongside Hillary Bricken, who's an attorney specializing in regulation and the business of marijuana. Hillary, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me.
All right. Kika Keith is the owner of Gorilla RX Wellness. This is a dispensary in Leimert Park. She's also co-founder of SEOWA. That's the Social Equity Workers and Owners Association. Kika, welcome to you.
Hi, Steve. Glad to be here.
It's nice to have you. And Elliot Lewis, the founder and CEO of Catalyst Cannabis Company. They have 8 dispensaries in and around the Southland with more, many more, slated to open. Hey, Elliot.
Thanks for having me on.
It's nice to have you here as well. Hillary, I'm going to start with you. You're the expert here. We've talked to you before on this program about all things pot. Has LA implemented Prop 64, you know, the legalization of recreational cannabis? Has it implemented it well?
I'd say probably yes in some respects, in that it's got a functional cannabis market in probably what is the hottest cannabis market on the planet, if we look at all of the logistics that go into those things, which also makes it incredibly challenging to meet all of the goals that it set for itself. But I would say, to its credit, it's probably done way more for the operators than the state has done for licensees when it comes to hearing stakeholders and trying to implement what the industry locally needs to be done in order to survive. It's obviously had some breakdowns, including in social equity, with rolling out those licenses. But California's main problem, and this is not just specific to LA, is that the biggest barrier to entry is securing local approval. It's a lot of inside baseball. It's a tremendous amount of red tape. And licensees still have to be prepared for a massive capital outlay and a really lengthy timeline in order to even get their doors open. And unfortunately, LA is in that crowd.
When you say massive capital outlay, are you talking about just a ton of money that most people don't have?
A ton of money that most people don't have. It's very difficult to get fundraising, and I'm sure some of the panelists can talk about this. They probably have firsthand experience. Fundraising is not easy, and a lot of the stupid money has left the space. It's gotten incredibly competitive, so it is not easy to basically fund one of these operations into initial fruition, let alone manage it into great survival and ultimately profitability.
Elliot, you had to open one of these. You started with one. You've got 8 now. You're probably going to have more later. How'd you get off the ground?
Yeah. Well, we're unique. We were able to kind of get a stack of licenses in Long Beach, so we sold a couple off that kind of helped fund the larger operation. We've always been underfunded. We did get a tiny bit of institutional money, but to the previous point, you know, it's expensive money. You know, we mom-pot our way there, and we just have really low corporate overhead. I've never taken a salary. Most of our staff, that's corporate, is really, really slimmed down. We don't even, you know, they're not making a whole lot more than the bud tenders. Ultimately, you know, very hard business to run, I would take the counter position that LA did a good job. I think they've done a horrible job in a lot of regards, but that's emblematic of the larger system. And it's just a total abject failure. And, you know, California generally, politically, LA and in Sacramento at the state, they say they're for social equity. They say they're for good paying jobs. They say they're for legal cannabis and all these other things that happen on, you know, there's a lot of good people in the illicit trade, but there's abuses of women's rights, workers' rights. Meanwhile, they have the boot on our throat and there's nobody really that's thriving. You know, our business model is, you know, just to survive. Until hopefully there's some major reforms at the state level. Three quarters of the market remains illicit. Even in the legally grown market, in quotes, three quarters of that is getting backdoored, traded on the illicit market. So, you know, my position is, yeah, it's here. It's a little better than it was. But it was never supposed to be about a money grab, especially at the state level. If the cities need money, fine, we're okay to pay a little bit of tax. But the states turned it into a money grab and they're just redistributed it to their friends. So it's been frustrating to watch. To be part of.
We do have a lot to unpack there, Elliot, and we will throughout the program. Kika, I want to bring you in because you had to sue to get your place in the marijuana marketplace, correct? Explain what you had to do and how you're doing now, and do you agree with what Elliot had to say?
Well, I was just going to say Elliot is on point. And I think you'll hear the truth when you talk to the operators and those that are going through the application process. And, you know, there's two different worlds that we're living in, especially when you talk about the difference between the existing medical licensees or the general applicants versus social equity. And, you know, in the state of California and the city of LA, where social equity was supposed to be a means to give an advantage to those that were most harmed by the war on drugs, we have the highest fees, we've had the most delays, we've missed any first mover advantage. And we've had no protections from sharecropper agreements and predatory investors, let alone the city itself that failed in its application submission process. And we did. I had to co-found the Social Equity Owners and Workers Association. I came in this industry to be an entrepreneur. I'm a single mother. And I looked at this as a means of self-sufficiency and no means that I think that I'd have to be a lobbyist and organize my community and mobilize to fight to say, listen, you know, we are justly due a place in this industry. It was voted on by the voters. And instead, the system was rigged. And that was shown by the early entrants in the city of L.A. It was first come, first serve, quite like buying a pair of Nikes or a Beyonce ticket. You had to get in right at 10 o'clock. And over 200 people got in early. And so we collectively organized folks in the community. We filed a lawsuit against the city of Los Angeles. And not only was able for myself to get licensed, but 99 others. And that was very impactful in a system where they really did not intend for folks that were harmed by the war on drugs to bring equity into this industry.
But that's what they said they wanted to do, right, with this social equity, is make sure that the people that who were harmed got in. But you didn't get in the first time around because it was all online. And it was, you know, just a few seconds where everybody signed up very quickly, right?
Yeah, and not just myself, but a lot more of my brothers and sisters who were incarcerated didn't get in, who were arrested, who weren't able to keep their businesses open, didn't get in. And when you look at historically in Black and brown communities, we have incredibly slow internet. So then even have to compete in the field with folks that are in high-rise buildings with, you know, high-speed internet. From the bat, it wasn't set up for us to win. And I always say that this cannabis legalization, especially on the recreational side, has been a big Trojan horse for the big investors that need that for the voters to feel compassionate. Oh, we're going to make this benefit the communities that were harmed by the war on drugs. And then the voters voted in. And the next thing you know, once again, they're the multi-state operators and those that are well-resourced don't give a damn about the people that were harmed by the war on drugs, don't give a damn about the social impact, but are focused on capitalism.
And you had to sue. You got in after the lawsuit, right? You got in so you could be
yes.
a part of the second 100 people who could open in the social equity movement, correct?
That's right. I'm the first African-American woman to own and operate and open up in the city of Los Angeles. And it took that fight, but it was well worth it.
Yeah.
I call my place the house that people built because so many people contributed, so many community members showed up at city council, at City Hall to make sure that myself and others had an opportunity to compete in this industry.
Mary, we've heard during the pandemic over the past year and a half, 20 months, consumers were buying more alcohol and they were smoking and eating more cannabis. You think that's going to continue, or are we seeing that start to level off?
Well, I think that people are going to continue to buy cannabis more now than ever before. And I think that's something that's a trend that is going to continue. And I think that it's going to even outsell alcohol as well. And I think that, you know, through the pandemic, we watched a lot of people reach for something. They needed something that was going to relax their nerves, something that was going to make them feel better. And I think a lot of people really turned a corner realizing that cannabis is that. And I think that people are just going to continue on that train, essentially.
Hillary Bricken, are they buying it legally or are they buying it illegally?
And it's probably a mixture of both. I think California has tremendous enforcement issues for one reason or another, because the theme here is that the state has really lacked in getting its act together around multiple issues in the industry, one of which is enforcement. And I'm not sure that they can possibly even wrap their hands around it without looping in the locals. And it doesn't seem like either the competence or the desire is there to crack down on some of these illicit practices, which are definitely taking place in the legal cannabis market. But I still think California is a place where most people are going to get their cannabis from their friend or outside of the licensed chain of stores, because they're not necessarily buying into the psychology of legalization. And I think all states have these issues, but in California, it's acute because there's so many people here and cannabis has been normalized basically since 1996.
Elliot, dare I ask, you know, when it comes to the illicit market, the market that is illegal, how does that affect your business?
Well, I was going to jump in. You know, we never got in this for there to be a war on drugs 2.0. That's all enforcement's going to bring. We're not pro enforcement. You know, it's a lot of creative people that are way smarter than the state and the local officials could ever be, that are just, you know, trying to put bread on the table. Of course, there's bad actors within that. The issue is just the taxes. So much as there's a 40% tariff, essentially, against the legal market, people are always going to buy in the illicit market. If they remove the taxes or dramatically, and I'm not talking like a little bit, dramatically reduce them through economies of scale and more access, the illicit market would go away. So yes, 75-80% of the purchases are illegal, but that's because it's 40% cheaper and a lot of people are price sensitive. They're never going to be able to outsmart the illicit market, and we're trying to get away from incarcerating people, especially communities of color and communities that have been impacted on the war on drugs. So there is no way to enforce your way out of this. The only way to make it so that it's a thriving legal cannabis market is to lower barriers of entry. And the main thing right now that's just glaring is the tax rates.
Mary, carry on. If these taxes, these, you know, exorbitant taxes were suddenly lowered a lot, would that magically increase the number of people getting involved in the legal cannabis market?
Well, I think it would definitely open the market up to them. I think right now it is completely unattainable to so many people, and that is what is causing a lot of people who were once in the legal industry, that is causing people who want to be in the legal industry to not be able to sustain that type of taxation anymore. And so they have no choice but to keep existing in the traditional market. And yeah, I think that one of the ways to, you know, cause a dent in the illegal market would be to make licenses and licensure in general and regulatory costs much lower and much more attainable by more people. Absolutely.
Do people at the Department of Cannabis Control, this is the DCC at the state level, do they see this, Hillary Bricken? Do they understand what Elliot is lamenting about, and everybody else for that matter, that this is a failure or has been a failure, and the illicit market is going to continue, you know, writ large as it's been doing with these high tax rates, with the level of difficulty that it takes to get into the legalized market?
I do think that they see it, and I think that high taxes are a piece of it. And again, every state is grappling with these issues. Actually, the taxes in Washington state are much higher, but the market's much smaller because they're not as open as California with their barriers to entry. So every state is dealing with this premium sin tax, and I think they see it. But taxes are only one aspect of the expense of operating in California. California has another big problem, which is local control. And many, many of the financial pain points are also at the local control level to even get in to do business in the first place. And the state will never be able to persuade or argue their way or force the cities and the counties to get away from those models. That's going to take local advocacy. So I'd say it's probably the issue of, yes, increased tax rates, but also this staggering local control barrier to entry that breaks a lot of banks of a lot of operators.
Let's get back to Kika. And as we've reported on this program before, you know, the challenging idea it was for folks to obtain the social equity dispensary license through LA's Department of Cannabis Regulation. This is the DCR at the local level. And, you know, Kika, you had to obtain a property and pay rent, you know, while meeting all department requirements, making sure that the business partners had to be a social equity applicant. You own and operate your own company, but there is a lot of room in that process for someone to be taken advantage of, right? Explain that. Is the DCR addressing that and other sorts of issues at the local level with the licensing process?
The DCR is just addressing this 3 years later. There's literally a motion on the table that's being heard in the Planning and Land Use Committee meeting. The DCR's recommendations have very comprehensive reform. But we're talking about 3 years that people like myself were paying $12,000 a month on an empty property. The difference between a social equity application and a general application are the operating agreements and the equity share agreements that they make with their investor. Well, there was no oversight. There was nothing in their process for them to review these documents until over 2.5 years later. And to this date, they still haven't begun that process. And so you have so many of the 200 that are prey to these predatory practices of these investors that are coming in and not doing what is the intent of the social equity program, to provide business licensing, compliance assistance, to incubate, to mentor that applicant, and to create an enterprise and partner. Instead, they've come to rape and pillage the community. And it has been a shame that there has not been a legal construct to have oversight of that. And yet in 2017, in the social equity analysis that we waited months to get, that the city spent over $100,000 to get, it gave a very clear cut that every city should look at of how to implement a successful social equity program. And the city of LA did not follow one of those recommendations. You know, you have cities like Oakland that actually have social equity tax rebates and incentives, even for the brands and the manufacturers, not just even at the retail level with the excise tax, but you're also seeing tax breaks for those stores that will carry social equity retail brands. The cities just are not taking the time to not only create the laws, but create the policies and procedures in order to implement successful programs. And that's the failure. But it is a simple fix. But they just need to put a focus on doing it right.
Hillary, what are some of the upsides of where we are 5 years into cannabis legalization, recreational cannabis? Is there something we can look at and say, all right, well, this is something that California did right?
I think there are a few things. I refuse to be super pessimistic about it because these democratic experiments are incredibly important to the ultimate golden ring, which is federal legalization. What California did right, at least in my opinion, was that they met their initial licensing deadline of January 1, 2018. There have been states where the initial rollout itself has taken years with no licensing that's been implemented whatsoever. I also think at the end of the day, to have such an intense program with over 20 license types that are available to operators is incredibly difficult to implement. It's not going to be perfect, maybe even in a decade. And what I'd like to see as far as improvement goes is more policy study of borrowing the positive things from other programs across other states. There should be no ego here in who's going to land on a golden standard for the cannabis industry on a state-by-state basis. All of the states should really be cooperative because they're drivers of policy and they're in the driver's seat compared to the feds. Because when the federal cloak falls, if certain local barriers to entry and protectionist measures are not in place, competition is going to get very intense very quickly. And I also think that the states need to keep an eye on that. They don't need to kill off operators with cost prohibition and arbitrary red tape, but they do need to keep some of these barriers to entry to protect people in the future, ironically, for when federal legalization comes. And I do think that California thinks about some of those things occasionally.
Mary, what about you? What's LA gotten right with cannabis, do you think?
You know, it's so we never talk about the positives of Prop 64 because there are so many negatives. But I would definitely say that Prop 64 has turned Los Angeles and various parts of Northern California and even in Southern California into legal cannabis hubs where the technology around cannabis delivery methods has changed, which has allowed the proliferation of new products to evolve and change and be available to people who typically wouldn't use cannabis because they don't want to smoke, for instance. So that has changed a lot. And we're seeing a rise of what mainstream cannabis culture is going to look like. And we can't run from that anymore. Like, that's happening right now before our eyes. But at the end of the day, you know, people are still going to prison for cannabis and they're still going to jail and still getting in trouble. So what we need to do is ensure that these local municipalities all over the country, but mostly in California right now, they need to open up so that the cannabis industry can evolve and continue to grow, because right now there is a cap on its growth.
Elliot, where do we go from here, do you think? Where are you going? You're obviously trying to expand. You've got a lawsuit before the state right now. What's your next step, and how do you navigate all this?
Well, so, you know, we're writing to the, one of the earlier people's points. We're writing initiatives up and down the state to crack the local control. Don't want to get too much into it on the radio, but you'll see 15 additional cities probably within the next year that we write with our own pen. We locally gather signatures. We pass initiatives so that, you know, eventually there'll be statewide coverage. Everybody thinks Prop 64 passed. Woohoo! There's brick and mortar everywhere. Not true. Maybe 10% of the, you know, cities in LA, you know, there's a few in Orange County, the whole Inland Empire, et cetera, et cetera. So we're doing that. We're suing the state. You know, essentially our goal is to embarrass them. They know they could have put the fix in the metric, but they did not. It's a super oppressive program if you do it right. However, there's huge loopholes. And so what people don't necessarily realize, these legal huge grows, you know, 3/4 of that product is getting, you know, shipped out of state and on the illicit market. And then we're fighting wherever we can. Apparently lowering taxes isn't a good issue. So we're going to run an initiative in Long Beach, again, gather 22,000 signatures, get it on the ballot against big oil. So we're going to run this 4% tax locally, which ours is 8. So it's half as much. And that's a $30 million tax against oil, because you're never going to take the money from them. So they need additional sources of revenue. So the short part of your question is, we're activists to the core. You know, we're fighting for the industry. I love, you know, that part of the business. My joke is, you know, my day job is CEO, and, you know, I'm really an advocate at heart, and I sell weed to fund the revolution.
Kika, I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked Elliot. Where are you headed with Gorilla RX, and where is LA headed? Forget the state. What about local?
I'm always going to speak to the challenges that we had, as Hillary mentioned. It is important because all these upcoming cities and states are able to look at what we did wrong in order to figure out what to do right. But I am excited. My doors are open. The community is coming in. They're supporting it. They're enjoying the experience. They're getting educated about cannabis. They're seeing it in a different way than they've seen before. And that is amazing. And then behind us, you know, the road that we paved, we helped over 40 folks get licenses, social equity licenses, in all the different areas in the city of Los Angeles. And they're opening their doors now. You know, you have other Black women like Josephine and Bailey's and 64th and Hope and Green Paradise Evelyn that's about to open, and Madison Shockley got another shop. And so we're building community, and we're creating new models of how to do it and how to do it collectively, how to have cooperative economics, so that as I'm building, I'm able to give and train in the community. Others that come after us are able to give back. And to me, that's what's important. You know, we only see these models of the MedMens of the world and these big enterprises, but there is a different model that's based on how cannabis and the heart and the root of what it is that will succeed. And that's all of the goodness that's happening each and every day, which makes me happy to wake up and able to sleep good at night.
Kika Keith, the owner of Gorilla RX Wellness, also the co-founder of COA. Elliot Lewis, CEO of Catalyst Cannabis Company. Hillary Bricken, attorney specializing in regulation in the business of cannabis. And Mary Carrion, freelance cannabis journalist. I want to thank you all for our special show, 5 years of legalized recreational weed here in California. Thanks to you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. It was a real pleasure.
Pleasure was Mine. That's going to do it for us today. What about you? How do you feel about California's legalization of recreational cannabis 5 years later? Let us know with your comments or questions at kcrw.com/askgreaterla. And while you're there, subscribe to the podcast, too. Get it regularly as new episodes drop, all online at our website, kcrw.com/GLA. Jenna Cagle, Sonia Geis, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordahl all help piece the show together this evening. Thanks to them. Thank you for your ears, your time, and attention tonight. I'm Steve Chertakis. Have a great night.